Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter.
What's up, Jenna Wolf?
Get my dang old glasses.
Oh, my bad, man. Sorry about that.
Bad kids. Jeez, get my glasses.
I'm Nick Wright.
I need them.
That really threw you off.
That threw me so far off that I had no words.
She didn't know who she was sitting next to.
I had no idea what was happening. He did seem a little smarter for the brief moment when
IQ
I looked
went
over.
Up. Which, also, yeah. You look taller with the glasses on, too. You might want to try to get a pair.
You can have mine if he wants
no,
to.
No, I don't need bifocals. Thank you.
Okay, right off the bat. We have two conference championships games to look into. We are going to look way deep into those two, so we will start with yet another Super Bowl run from Tom Brady.
Look at him.
Brady and the Pats.
Both of us, four eyes.
Brady and the Pats advancing to their eighth straight AFC conference game. That after beating the Chargers this past week. And as a reward, oh, they get the toughest offense in football, the Kansas City Chiefs. So they did beat the Chiefs 43-40 earlier this season, but that was at Gillette, where the Pats went undefeated this season. Now they're at Arrowhead, where the Chiefs went 7-1. Brady says it'll take a great effort to beat this team a second time.
Kansas City is a great football team. They really are. We played them at home. You know, they've been having an incredible season. You know, even the games they've lost, they've been right at them till the end. So anything less than our best, you know, won't make it this week. And, you know, it's a tough place to play. You know, we just got to be as mentally and physically prepared, be as mentally and physically tough, and go in there and try to beat a great football team.
All right, CC, this Chiefs offense has been great the entire season, and yet back in week six, this was a close game between the Patriots and the Chiefs, and the Patriots won. How were they able to do it back in week six? How did they keep pace with the Chiefs back then?
That is a legitimate question when you have historically one of the best teams we've seen scoring the football. And it's not only just their passing game. Patty Mahomes, yes, he's going to get a lot of that attention because of 50 touchdowns, but their ability to balance it, who they're going to throw to, Tyreek Hill, Kelce, the others that they have. And I got to admit, it's since Kareem Hunt's been out, they've been able to have the balance of running the football. And that I was concerned about because that running component with Kareem, that made that offense even. I mean, it's a special offense, but when you get in the red zone, when you have that threat that you can run it, it makes it a lot easier to score. But the only way, and that this is any offense, this is the Saints, this is the Rams, and even the Pats. And I think it's the first time in NFL history we've had the first four, the highest scoring teams. So
or
it's
the final
so,
four.
So yes. How do they do it? When you try to pick apart these offenses, oh, who's best and everything, The team that gets the help from the defense. So how does New England do it? The only way you can keep pace with Kansas City is if your defense, especially in the red zone, if it tightens up. And that's what New England has done for years. Week number six, what was the difference in this meeting besides a couple calls there at the end? It happened to be New England's red zone defense, especially early in the game, making Kansas City settle for field goals, and that's the way you're able to keep pace with them. If you can get, we talked about last week with the Colts, if they were able to get 6 to 7 trips inside that red zone, if you can make a few of those trips, three of those trips into field goals, I mean, you are really going to be able to help yourself out when it gets to the end of the game. So I don't believe play for play, talent for talent, that there's someone that can match up with Kansas City. And if the Pats are going to be able to do it, they need some help from their defense, especially in that red zone, which they've been great at for a long time with Bill Belichick.
So you mentioned the Chiefs running game post Kareem Hunt. Damian Williams has done a really close facsimile of Kareem Hunt. Not easy to do. He's the rushing champ last year. In the running game, one spot in week six where Kareem Hunt was special was receiving the football. And that's one spot Damian Williams is not as good. Just flatly, Kareem Hunt was underrated as far as his ability and what Kansas City likes to do in the screen game to using their running back. And he caught a touchdown on a wheel route up the field that I haven't seen Damian Williams do that. So that part of the Chiefs offense will be different. But I think this part of the Pats offense will be different. One of the reasons they were able to hang 43 on Kansas City, Rob Gronkowski, 97 yards receiving. We haven't seen that. We've seen that from Gronk once in the last 10 weeks of the season. Josh Gordon, 5 for 42, including the first pass of the game.
And he targeted a bunch of other times.
Right. He's not on the team anymore. So the Pats got 139 yards from those two guys. And in vintage Patriot fashion, They didn't have an accepted penalty the entire game, so they were never hurting themselves, and they never punted. They went for it on a fourth down and didn't get it.
No penalties, no punts.
No penalties, no punts.
And the last two you can count on again, probably. You can't, obviously, we don't know if what Gronk is going to do. We haven't seen it, and there's no Josh Gordon. But you can rest assured this team's going to be buttoned up penalty-wise.
Right, they're not going to be highly penalized. I don't think it'll be 0-0 again.
Of course.
But you can rely. They will have elongated drives. They will be able to convert on third down. And that they're not going to be highly penalized. The other thing to C's point, which is in the first, this game was 24-9 Pats at halftime. It was kind of remarkable the Chiefs were able to take a second half lead when you're down 15 points at halftime in that building. And why was it 24-9? On the first drive, Patrick Mahomes misses an open receiver for a touchdown. That's the nerves I was talking about.
Yep.
They settle for a field goal. On the second drive, he gets picked. Mm-hmm. On the fourth drive, they have first and goal from the seven. They settle for a field goal. On the fifth drive of the half, he's picked in the red zone again. This is right before halftime.
Yes.
So the Chiefs had a bunch of scoring opportunities, couldn't convert it to touchdowns, or else 43 wouldn't have been enough for the Patriots.
The question I wanted to ask you about, which I just assumed would be a big topic heading into this AFC title game, was going to be experience and how top to bottom the Patriots have it. They've been there. They've done that from the coaching down to the players. They don't get rattled. But Patrick Mahomes wasn't rattled in the divisional round. He came out, he looked great early on, and he was able to manage and stay composed throughout the game. Does experience factor into this game at all?
Experience, it's always the people who don't have experience who say the experience doesn't matter. But this is New England's experience, and I'm talking about recent. They've been a bad football team on the road. Now, does their playoff experience supersede their inability to play quality football on the road? So that's the question I have to ask, because they have a lot of experience, but they just haven't been good on the road. Will they be as good on third down without having that hometown crowd? Because I expect Kansas City fans to get non-conversions on third down on three or four of those third downs just by the noise that they're going to make and the inability for the Patriots to be able to audible the way they were doing in the first week, week number six, where they didn't force them to punt. So this is going to be a different meeting. Experience will only take you so far. I also believe that the experience of Andy Reid, it will help out Kansas City, because he's gone against Belichick a lot of times, and Andy Reid in this matchup, I believe, helps alleviate some of that difference in overall experience. And the last two meetings, this young football team facing New England, seeing them eye to eye, being able to go up and down the field with them, I think their own personal experience as Kansas City Chiefs is going to help this young football team playing at home, Nick.
And so 2 points. One is on the experience factor. One of the reasons I believe we see young quarterbacks struggle typically in their first postseason run is it's very rare for a young quarterback, when they make the postseason, to have their entire postseason run be at home. It's the Deshaun Watson path, right? Where they, even if they had won that game, they then go on the road. It's Dak, they won that game, they then had to go on the road.
Right,
it's
if you look at the young quarterbacks who have had great success, that being Brady, being Eli, and Peyton, and Ben Roethlisberger, you're right.
Ben had the success. They were 15-1 that year. They were throughout home. Peyton Manning, if you remember, he didn't have the one seed every year early, and it was one of the difficulties he had. Brady was lucky. I shouldn't say lucky. He was a huge part of it.
Yes.
But his first year, they were the two seed. So Mahomes, I don't know how he's going to play in a road playoff game, but he's not going to have to play in one of those this season. But the other thing as far as experience goes is this. These Pats players have bad experience with Andy Reid Chiefs teams hanging a bunch of points on them. This is a number that is, to me, startling, and I'm going to say it probably a dozen times this week. Bill Belichick has coached 338 games with the New England Patriots against everyone other than Andy Reid Chiefs teams. 338 games.
Mm-hmm.
He's allowed 40 points four times in those 338 games. He's coached against the Andy Reid Chiefs four times. He's allowed 40 points, three of them. So in his whole career with the Pats, he's allowed 40 points seven times. Three of them have been games against the Andy Reid-led Chiefs.
And the other
in the
one,
last
did they have 27?
They had, yeah, they got to nearly 30. You're
okay.
Right, absolutely
okay.
Right. And so
wow.
This Chiefs team, even with Alex Smith is the quarterback. Had success. They won in New England. They blew him out on Monday Night Football. And so Andy Reid schematically has had success against Belichick's defense.
Even going back to the Super Bowl in Philadelphia, Andy Reid's only trip there with the Philadelphia offense was very, very successful against that Patriots defense in that Super Bowl.
And Andy Reid's disciple, Doug Peterson, he's one of the other 40-point games in the Super Bowl and the only one in the playoffs.
Man, man, where are my glasses? You're smarter, okay?
You guys are – I need those glasses.
There
you
go,
you
Jenna.
Kidding?
They'll look okay on you.
Coming up, can the Cowboys make the leap in 2010?
2019.
My God. Stephen Jones seems to think so. It sounded wrong when I said it.
Yeah.
We're back after this. You may want these back.
Thank you. Okay.
Big news, America. The Dallas Cowboys, in addition to that yacht, bought a time machine. Jenna Wolf's got them going 9 years backwards.
Glasses. Welcome back. We'll get to the Cowboys' future in a minute. But first, Grizzlies, Rockets, Mike Conley to Garrett Temple, who throws down the dunk. Watch it. Ooh.
Garrett Temple has carved out for himself a really nice career. And it's impressive to me because I didn't see this coming from him early in his career.
Did you see this? Celtics Nets, Jaylen Brown driving down the lane, delivers the big left-handed tomahawk.
Celtics tried to make it a game late. Yep. Brooklyn really played well at home. Celtics minus a couple starters. Jaylen Brown, when he's not getting told off by Kyrie as far as being a younger player, not knowing what to do. Well, he knew what to do on that.
And Jaylen had a little comments for Kyrie after the game. Oh, no.
Big night for Knicks, Syracuse, Orangemen. Duke, Syracuse, Zion doesn't give up perfectly. Times the block here.
This game, for me personally, couldn't have gone better. Because Cuse won, but Zion had a monster game.
Yes.
What a fun game to watch. Duke dealing with some injuries. One, Cam Reddish out with an illness. Their point guard gets hurt early. Syracuse took advantage.
More from this one. Cuse's Elijah Hughes launches a shot from the other side of the court. Nails it. Syracuse with a big upset in this one.
And listen, when a game goes to overtime, that shot right there matters quite a bit now.
Oh, yeah. After that shot, the buzzer beater before halftime, didn't score until the opening bucket of overtime. Mm-hmm. So he took a bowel after this one and took some time off.
Absolutely.
Chilling.
Moving on to the Cowboys. They finished their season with a loss to the Rams. Overall, good year for Dallas after starting the year 3-5, winning 10 regular season games and getting Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott their first ever playoff win. But according to Cowboys COO Stephen Jones, this team needs to continue to get better in the future.
We've got to build on this, take the next step next year, and I think we've got a good young team that can certainly have success. But, certainly we weren't good enough to get the job done. You are what you are, and we got eliminated in the divisional round, and we've got to do better than that.
All right, let's get into a little more specific on how they can get better. How do they build off the season they just had this season?
Well, I think they've got to have an honest conversation with themselves about how good can this team be at its best, because this is going to be their team moving forward. They have a lot of cap space this offseason, about $50 million. That'll go up to nearly $60 if they move on from Sean Lee. But we can start ticking away at that right now. You want to keep DeMarcus Lawrence? There's about $18 million.
He got franchised this season.
Right. So he either walks or you give him a long-term deal. Maybe they franchise him a second time. But either way, $18 to $20 million. Dak is getting a new deal. We know Amari's getting a new deal. And Zeke probably is getting a new deal. There's your cap space. So they're not going to have to lose any of those guys, but
gone.
It's
just
all
like
gone.
That. It sounds good when you start the conversation, but it goes quickly.
And so the keys for the Cowboys are, in no particular order, getting Travis Frederick back, which is wildly important.
Which doesn't involve money.
Right.
It's just his overall health. He's the best center in football. It seems like he's on his road to recovery.
I was going to say, it seems like he will be back and healthy.
We think,
that's what
this is like the hardest, because it's not an injury. None of us really understand. Only Mark Schlereth dealt with it, so he has an idea. But
when he was full strength after a year.
And so we have reason to believe he'll be back. And I would say the two biggest components for the Cowboys are their other offensive linemen getting back to all-pro caliber form in Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, the guard they took, Connor Williams, justifying that second-round draft pick. And then, of course, as is the case with every Cowboys conversation, where does Dak's play go? Because there are no – they obviously don't have a first-round pick, and they don't have – they're not going to be, I think, big-time players in free agency. It's this team. And now this team you have some faith in because they won 8 of 9 down the stretch, including a playoff game over the Seahawks. But it's not going to be some remake of the team, and it's not going to be a bunch of different faces coming in.
But of all the question marks on the guys that you will have to sign this offseason, Dak seems the one with the biggest question. It was year one. Year two, mm-hmm. and then year three was sort of like this, and you want to know which way he's going. But they're going to sign him regardless.
I think Jerry and Steven in the Dallas front office there, they've made up their mind that Dak is going to be their quarterback of the future. It becomes very important, Nick, what he thinks about his future, what's more important. Does he want to try to get in the Kirk Cousins type range as far as money, or does he settle for something a little bit less so that they can put other pieces around him? I believe that the second is the better of the options because of the inconsistency, and if he's going to reach his potential, they're going to need that cap space to be able to put some other players around him. So my suggestion for the Cowboys is you need to be able to enhance your stars and be able to protect your stars. Number one being Dak Prescott. It starts with Travis Frederick and that offensive line. The left tackle. We need to have some heart-to-heart conversation. Is he an elite player? Because if he's not an elite player anymore, what typically happens is I need to see some of that money that he's making because I'm paying him to be an elite player. He's not elite anymore, so I look for them to ask him to take a pay cut. Zeke is going to get an extension. They need to continue to develop their tight end position and add more speed to the offense. If you're able to do that with a tight end and more speed, you help Dak continue to develop as a quarterback, and you help Ezekiel Elliott lengthen his career because you take some of that burden off of him on the offensive side. Defensively, you know Lawrence is a star. You franchised him. He's earned the long-term contract. But what you need to do, the other stars on that defense are their inside linebackers. They need a couple big defensive tackles. They don't need to spend a lot of money on it, but they need big so that these linebackers can run and be utilized in space. For me, that's the remedy to the Cowboys of how they go forward. You have to protect your stars. You have to expect them to continue to get better. But how do you do that? You put people in front of them, linebackers. You put those defensive tackles. Dak, you help him out with other speed guys on the outside. And Ezekiel Elliott, you remove some of that burden that him carrying the ball 400 times. Like, is that necessary going forward?
A month ago, when the Cowboys looked positioned to turn their season around, going into that Eagles game, which was if they won it, they were going to lock up the division for all intents and purposes. I said the Cowboys might look back through hindsight if they win this game and wish they hadn't. And the reason I said it was I thought if they won that game and won the division, it was guaranteed Dak was getting an extension this offseason. Now, to Dak's credit, they won that game. They won the next couple games. They won two of the next three, I should say. They won a playoff game. Dak played, I thought, a very good Dak Prescott game in that playoff game, and he's not the reason they lost against the Rams. He's getting the extension. You guys know my philosophy on if you pay a quarterback franchise money and he is not a force multiplier, the enormous deficit to put your team into. This is where, no matter whether it's $20 million or $28 million, the money he gets this offseason, whatever he can do to get himself to the next level as a player, he does not have to be one of the five best quarterbacks in football, but he has to be in the argument as one of the six best quarterbacks in his conference. And so that's where he's got, and we know Breeze is there, we know Rodgers is there, Wentz is in his division, but with health questions. And so he needs to come up at least one tick. If he does that, then we know what the Cowboys' blueprint is, and I agree with Chris wholeheartedly. This offseason, even with limited draft capital, tight end and interior defensive line are the two spots that I think allow my other strengths to become even bigger strengths.
I feel like we have this conversation all the time. If he gets a little bit better, if he's just a little more accurate, if he maybe uses his athleticism a little bit, there's a lot of ifs with Dak Prescott. How many quarterbacks have we seen over the last couple years that in their, you know, we look back and we say, well, the first 3 years, the jury was still out, but then in their fourth year, they really took off and became something? Or does it not really work that way?
It only happens at the top of the league. We'll start at the top, Tom Brady. If you look at them in year 1, 2, and 3, let's go to New Orleans and Drew Brees. Both of these guys have the most experience. We have the other young quarterbacks in Patty Mahomes. That's what we forget. We forget the process that players go through. Dak being on one of the teams, one of the marquee teams, and them being part of the conversation as far as the national media, he gets more attention on him. But Tom Brady was no further along than Dak Prescott.
And Ben Roethlisberger either.
Now, Drew Brees was a prolific thrower.
Prolific
thrower in college. But he still was developing his overall arm strength when he was in. And the Chargers gave up on him. Yep. And the Saints, they the one invested, and we saw him continue to grow there. So I believe that Dak is on the right track. Just as easy as they traded for Amari Cooper. Look how much better he got. Now we add another tight end, add some other things to that offense. I believe he can take those necessary steps that Nick's talking about.
I was very concerned with Dak Prescott around the midway point of the season.
Yeah.
When he couldn't crack 270 yards passing in a game, when the Cowboys were struggling, when it looked like the progression was here to here to here. What he did over the last eight games showed me growth to where you can say, okay, continue on that growth path, and it wouldn't be unprecedented, to your question, for him to get where we're talking
about. I think also what we've seen in Nick Foles, I think we can continue to learn. You can see with Nick Foles as a passer, in the last year and a half, he's gotten so much better. He's so much more visually able to see things down the field. He trusts what he's seen. He's got enough arm strength to be able to reach almost all parts of the football field. So that development process, it's hard. It's hard when you have a franchise quarterback and you're trying to help him make those next steps. But we have seen other guys do it. We weren't patient in those times. And typically with Dak, we're not going to be patient watching him develop.
And what Foles had working for him last year was Frank Reich and Doug Peterson. This year he has Doug Peterson. I don't believe Dak has yet had the great quarterback coach around him. Either the great offensive mind. I think they've been fine. I think Jason Garrett gets criticized all the time. I think he's fine. I wonder this offseason if the biggest move the Cowboys could make is try to do the Sean McVay thing, except not as the head coach, as someone to come in to work
with. Yeah, they've already said they're going to bring Scott Linehan back. They've already done that.
And we already know that Jason Garrett, after the way the Cowboys finished the season, is going to be around for a long time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, we got to take a break. Did you guys hear what Marcus Peters had to say? Oh, this is going to be great. Wait till you hear what he had to say. His gumbo comments. That's next on First Things First. To the NFL now. Kareem Hunt is still without a team after being cut by the Chiefs. In their end-of-season press conference, the Chicago Bears did not rule out the possibility of signing Hunt, who coach Matt Nagy called a really good kid. Nagy's Kansas City's offensive coordinator for Hunt's rookie season. See, what do you make of this?
This is what it takes. It takes someone. When you have the record that Kareem Hunt, and we don't know what's going to be uncovered in their investigation, you need someone who knew you before. And Matt Nagy, his history there in Kansas City, his experience with him as a rookie, that would open the door for the opportunity. I do believe that with the proper amount of rehab and with some type of penalty from the league, he should be back playing in the league. And I believe that Chicago is one of the likely spots because of that intel that Nagy has with Kareem as a rookie, Nick.
And all off-the-field incidents are not created equal. And I think it should be noted that Kareem Hunt seems to have an anger management problem, and potentially, because there were some other incidents at a bar not involving a woman, potentially a problem with alcohol. He does not, in everything I've read and from people talking to him, fit the profile of a guy that has engaged in domestic abuse, and I think that's one of the reasons a team might take a chance on him.
Finally, Kyler Murray declared for the NFL draft yesterday. While this doesn't close the door on his baseball future, he does keep his options open. All right, CeCe, what do you make of this?
He should keep his options open. The thing that I would be afraid of, if I had his size, because pro sports, it's about size, speed, power. And if you don't have those things, you have to have something else, some type of uniqueness that would make it. Why are they going to play you? Why do they need your skill level? Now, baseball, we've had this argument for a long time. Man, if I could play any sport professionally, I would play baseball. Well, we got a guy that has the potential to be a first rounder in the NFL and a first rounder in Major League Baseball. And those two, they've never been done before. And what we saw with Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders is different. Bo Jackson is a running back, and there's no skill set that's more transferable to higher level playing, high school to college, college to pro, than being a running back. Because you can toss them the ball, hand them the ball, and because their skill set, they can adapt without a lot of practice. Deion Sanders, you don't need a lot of practice for, I got that cat.
Right, cat
and if
corner.
That cat goes over there, I got that cat. So you don't need a lot of practice. Being the quarterback, being the face of a franchise, developing as a passer, you need to be there in the building on a regular basis. So for me, I think I would lean towards him playing baseball because we've never seen someone at his height be successful in the NFL. Now, Mel Kiper, I believe in Mel Kiper as a draft evaluator more than anyone else. And Mel Kiper says he's the most unique prospect that he's ever seen. So that uniqueness, I could understand why a team would take a chance and make him a first-round pick.
Yeah, and but unique is not always a complimentary term. So sometimes you're unique because there's never been anyone like you. That's not intrinsically good. Sometimes Jenna's unique in a great way.
Oh,
there you go, Jenna
Wolf.
But he's unique because Doug Flutie's the only comp. And listen, Doug Flutie was a great story, but was not a great NFL player. Like that, Doug Flutie had one season as a full-time starter, one quality season as a full-time
Buffalo.
Starter. Yes, you were there.
I covered it.
19 touchdowns, 16 picks. The other season, he had a chance as a full-time starter with the San Diego Chargers in 01, 15 touchdowns, 18 picks. He was the best he could be in the NFL, was okay. And that's my concern. Even if Kyler's much better than him, University of Oklahoma released yesterday. I don't know why everyone's saying he's 5'8". We measured him this offseason. He's 5'9 in socks. Okay. So you will be the shortest
quarterback in
the NFL and the shortest in league history, not named Doug Flutie. That is a major, major concern.
When we started the season and throughout most of the season, the thinking and the assumption was that he was going to go play baseball. The A's signed him. It was baseball, baseball, baseball. Then he finishes out the season, plays in the Orange Bowl.
Wins the Heisman Trophy.
Wins the Heisman Trophy. And suddenly it's, maybe I'll keep my options open for football. What do you think changed his mind? Was it that he felt he got better as the season went on?
What I've been hearing behind the scenes, and I got a lot of respect for his dad. His dad was a big-time talent I thought should have been even a better pro. Great college player at Texas A&M. We played him, Ohio State played him in the Cotton Bowl. So based on his dad's background, I thought that he would have a love for football. But based on Kyler, what he's telling people is he's good at baseball, but he loves football. That's the reason why, because he played college football after being drafted. Mm-hmm. He told them, I'm going to play in college football. So he did that, and he went out and won the Heisman Trophy. So to me, if the intangible part is, what does the kid want to do? And if you can be a pro in either one, if the kid favors one sport over the other one, that's the one typically they're going to play. Now, what I think is more favorable for him at this point in the NFL, more than any other point, we just got 8 new coaches, and I'm just going to tell you, we are getting ready to see more Saturday football on Sunday in the NFL. So now would be the time to have someone.
This is the only time in NFL history, to me, he would even be considered a possible first-round pick. Like, I mean, look back to Charlie Ward. Now, I understand Charlie Ward wasn't quite the athlete that he was.
Yes.
Charlie Ward won the Heisman, said, I got to go play basketball. No one's even going to give me a shot playing quarterback. So, this is the time to do it. If he were 2 inches taller, but he's not. So I think he's going to end up a baseball player.
Yeah, Mel Kiper said if he was 3 inches taller, he'd be the first pick in the draft. Now, not only the influx of college and what they're doing in the pros, but the rules in the NFL.
Sure.
Now there's not a better time for a small guy to play because the game is less physical.
So easy, just some lifts in your cleats and you're 3 inches
taller.
Hard
to run like that.
I think Tom Cruise does that. Mm-hmm. Hey, back to the NFL playoffs.
Is that Tom Cruise?
Did I just give away a little Tom Cruise secret? Back in the playoffs where the Rams are heading to New Orleans to face the Saints. These two teams played earlier in the season. The Saints handing the Rams their first loss in 2018. Rams cornerback Marcus Peters has been waiting for the chance at revenge ever since. Had some spicy things to say to Saints head coach Sean Payton after that week 9 loss. Take a listen.
Tell Sean Payton, keep talking that we gonna see him soon. You feel me?
Fair enough.
Yeah, because I like what he was saying on the sidelines too. So tell him keep talking that and I hope you see me soon. You feel me? And then we're going to have a good little, nice little bowl of gumbo together.
All right, so that was back in week 9. But on Monday, Peters took to Twitter saying, it's gumbo week, let's eat. I think it has since been deleted. But, CC, how does the Rams' defense match up with the Saints' offense this time around?
I think they have the ability to match up better than what we might have thought going into the season. Because if you look at the way the Rams really concentrate on trying to eliminate Dallas from taking over in the running game, Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, the rest of that interior, they made a conscious effort. They're not going to run the football on us. So I do believe when people make up their mind that this something's not going to happen, and they have the talent to be able to do it. But it really boils down to the back end of this defense. What was the difference in the first meeting? The inability for the Rams to be able to get off the field in third down and their inability to negate big plays of the New Orleans Saints. So Marcus Peters, he's concentrating on Twitter. He need to concentrate on coverages because one reason, there's several reasons why he is out of Kansas City. Number one is he's not dependable. All right, and that's meaning on and off the field. You don't know what he's going to say, and he will freelance and guess and drop coverages. We saw that last week's games. We saw that in the first meeting with the Saints. That's one of the things about him. He is a gambler. So how will Sean Payton, and it will be a head game, because Sean Payton will talk trash on the sidelines. So this will be a back and forth. If I'm Marcus Peters, I need to concentrate on what I'm doing, because Amari Cooper is not the same thing as Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas being more physical and Marcus Peters wanting to play physical, that's Michael Thomas's game. So be careful if what you're trying to do doesn't play into the strong suit of what Michael Thomas and the Saints and Sean Payton are trying. They will definitely run a couple double moves against Marcus Peters and try to take advantage of his aggressiveness.
So there, because you're totally right that Peters is the ultimate boom or bust corner. That his first couple years in Kansas City, he led the NFL in takeaways. He burst onto the scene as a rookie, but he also gave up some huge plays. This year, he's had less of the boom and more of the bust, but still some big plays. But the other big difference in that football game is Marcus Peters was less healthy than he is now, and Aqib Talib wasn't there. And so now you all of a sudden...
McVay actually said Aqib Talib is the biggest difference between then and now. No, that was the biggest difference.
I would expect Aqib Talib to get most of the time on Michael Thomas. I know we'll talk about this later in the week, but to me, Aqib Talib is better with a physical receiver than Marcus Peters is. I think Aqib Talib, that might be a better matchup. Then you do worry about Teddy Ginn's speed and who's going to deal with that. So there's it's pick how you want to die sometimes against the Saints offense. There's no great answer. But I thought Coach Mangini, and it pains me to say this, made a really great point yesterday about the Rams defense, which is it possible that Ndamukong Suh and others were easing their way through the regular season to get to this moment healthy, to get to this moment ready to go, because they're veteran players on one-year deals knowing we are here to win a championship? If that's the case, that is bad news for everyone, including the Saints, because we know the talent that's on this Rams defense, and if they are able to duplicate what they did rush defense-wise, then those corners are going to have a much easier time in passing.
So something we haven't talked about a lot is the fact that besides Sheldon Rankins, these are two very healthy teams that are matching up, meeting up with everyone available. Is it rare that at this point in the season you get that?
It's very rare. They're not going to make excuses for the injuries, but I think there's a couple things. Andres Pete, the interior offensive lineman, he's dealing with a broken hand, played every snap last week. And we know Teron Armstead, the left tackle, he's dealing with a partially torn pec. So you're talking about with the Rams playing ascending defensively, totally different against the Cowboys. Man, if they can make that an advantage, man, against the Saints, now you're talking about if I knew that, then I would make the Rams a huge favorite, because the dominant team in the trenches, man, has a huge advantage in these games.
And you mentioned it. The Sheldon Rankins injury is a big one for New Orleans. I know we weren't talking about the New Orleans defense, but when we do, that was a big loss they suffered in the divisional round.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, will Tom Brady and the Patriots silence the doubters in Kansas City on Sunday? That is ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini joins us. We have a lot of questions for you as a former NFL head coach. Should we start?
Sure.
I'm going to say some words, then I'm going to get to the question. That's how the format of the show goes. Let's start.
Confusing.
Coach, the Eagles season may be over, courtesy of the Saints. What'd he say?
He said it's confusing. Just keep reading, please.
But the quarterback questions have only begun. Story of my life, Coach. It was the second straight year Carson Wentz had to watch his team win playoff games from the sideline. The second straight year Nick Foles took over and led the team on an impressive playoff run. Both quarterbacks say they'd like to lead a team. Here's Wentz talking to the media yesterday.
I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot both from watching Nick play and the type of player he was, and just seeing the guys just play as well. And, you know, just seeing the postseason success last year and now this year. And, you know, you take a lot of that and kind of store it away and use it as kind of motivation a little bit and those types of things. But, yeah, you definitely learn from a different perspective.
Coach, what do you expect from Carson Wentz next season?
This is really hard to tell and really hard to understand from an organizational standpoint as to what the best decision is. If you look at his three seasons, two of the 3 years when he was a starter, they had a losing record while he was a starter. So there's that component. When you look at what he's done statistically, the numbers are good, and there's been progress in all the key areas. So you're encouraged by that aspect, and you think, or you assume there's going to continue to be growth and growth within this system. You don't know what he can do in the playoffs. You don't know. You haven't seen him in those situations. So you're projecting out. And the injury component is real. He missed time in college. He missed time, mm-hmm. you know, again.
Two year seasons.
Two, and then year three.
Yeah, so even if you have him, do you have him? Can you trust that you have him? And then you're losing your what's been a fantastic backup plan with Foles. You've got a plan for, okay, Wentz is our starter. We're projecting that he's going to be this good. But you also have to have a serious plan in place if he misses time again, because history has shown that's what's going to happen.
Of all the things you listed, what's the one that's most concerning to you? What we don't know as far as the player he would be in the postseason, because I know that is an enormous part of your evaluation of quarterbacks, or what we do know, that he is a guy that in two of his 3 years have been ended with injury?
Well, it's two of his 3 years have been ended with injury, and two of his 3 years, they haven't had a winning record when he was the starter during that time period. Both of those, to me, are big concerns. And look, I've talked a lot about force multipliers, and I think he has a component of that. But you saw the way the team rallied around Nick Foles. You saw the energy and the things that Nick Plank brought to the rest of the group. And it's hard to quantify that. It's hard to say, okay, it's equal to this many wins or it's equal to this performance jump. But it is something that's real, even though you can't give a number for what that means.
And he knows it, too. He was asked about it yesterday in the press conference. Just, you know, you've been hurt two out of the last 3 years. And he said, I'm not an injury-prone quarterback. I don't want you to think this is who I am. Once this back heals, I'm going to be 100%. It's obviously something, CeCe, that he thinks about. And as an athlete, you don't want to be known as injury-prone, because then, like Coach said, they do need a backup plan.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants that tag on them, but it is what it is. There's certain guys that play football, and there's certain guys that play football, and they get injured. There's no understanding of it. And those who do get injured, they will be known as being injury prone until they overcome it. Now, is it something that early in his career, which we've seen players be able to do, to get banged up? Now, his back, that's not a concern of me going forward. What's a concern is, how much football did he learn watching Nick Foles? Because Nick Foles, people forget, he was a different quarterback several years ago. So I just believe in the process. I believe that quarterbacks, the more they see, if they're a big-time talent, because now the thing in Philadelphia is, how do I get Carson Wentz to the playoffs? How do I put him in a position that he can be like Nick Foles? So you have to have a fortified backup plan, because he's going to get injured. He's a rugged, big, athletic quarterback, and you're hoping that he's going to grow out of that, and you're hoping that he's going to play the game smarter, that the franchise quarterback doesn't put himself in jeopardy. But I believe in the overall growth. I believe that Carson Wentz is the franchise quarterback, because I've seen Nick Foles get so much better as a passer, and I'm just hoping that Carson Wentz stops looking to the intermediate get stopped looking to the check down, and he starts to have a little more Nick Foles in him and scan the field and take more chances down the field throwing the ball.
Because you're a huge believer in the prospect or the talent. The big, strong, fast, athletic, big arm. Like Nick Foles check, or I'm sorry, Carson Wentz checks all those boxes.
And comfortable playing in the league.
Right.
And he's transitioned from being a prospect to, he has shown me in the NFL that, yes, oh yeah, he can be my starter.
We saw him for three quarters of a season arguably be the best player in the league just a year ago. So we've seen him play at a very high level. I have a question that might catch you a little off guard, but I think it'll make sense. At what point in 01, if you guys had lost the Tuck Rule game, would Brady still have been the starter the next year? At what point did you guys decide, do you know that, you know what, we have a bigger, stronger, faster guy that we just gave a big contract to, and we're going with this other guy who at that time was not yet a great quarterback, but the team played its best football with him.
Well, that's interesting.
Is there...
Well, look, I don't think there was one point in 01 where we said, okay, this is the guy. I think that when you looked at Tom, you looked at traits, and you looked... Chris brings up a good point about the ability to develop and grow and get better. And Tom was that guy. And he, to some degree, he still is that guy. Mm-hmm. He still is chasing improvement. And that's what you are banking on, is those traits. And I think Carson Wentz has those traits. To me, it's a little bit like Andrew Luck. The Colts did a good job of going and improving their offensive line. Andrew Luck did a much better job of getting rid of the football, of not putting himself in harm's way unnecessarily for a 5-yard completion. And Carson's got to understand that, too. It's great to be rugged and tough and all those things, but you also have a responsibility to everybody else to be there, to be part of that team, to be healthy, and you've got to make better decisions. And that's a tough thing for guys to learn who have sort of an inherent bravado. You've got to get past that.
There's always a machismo to it.
You've got to get past that, because the strong thing to do is to get rid of the ball and do what's best for the greater good.
All right, let's take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, can the Patriots keep pace with one of the best offenses in NFL history? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. So Brady and the Pats advanced to their 8th straight conference title game after beating the Chargers this past week. And as a reward, they get the toughest offense in football in the Kansas City Chiefs. They did beat the Chiefs 43-40 earlier this season, but that was at Gillette, where the Pats went undefeated this season. Now they're at Arrowhead, where the Chiefs went 7-1, almost undefeated. Brady says it'll take a great effort to beat them a second time around.
Kansas City is a great football team. They really are. We played them at home. You know, they've been having an incredible season. You know, even the games they've lost, they've been right at them till the end. So anything less than our best, you know, won't make it this week. And, you know, it's a tough place to play. You know, we just got to be as mentally and physically prepared, be as mentally and physically tough, and go in there and try to beat a great football team.
Coach, it's not like this Kansas City offense just suddenly became great towards the end of the season. This was a high-powered offense all throughout. The first time these two teams played back in Week 6, somehow, some way, the Patriots were able to keep pace with them. How were they able to do it the first time around?
Well, I went back and watched most of the game last night, and when you look at the two first-half interceptions by Mahomes, the first interception, it wasn't a function of him being a young quarterback. I think a lot of guys would have got fooled by what happened. The linebacker kind of sloops out late and picks the ball off. It was a shallow crossing route. The throw, it was actually a beautiful throw, and that set up a Patriots touchdown. Now, to me, it's the second interception.
It was a killer.
It's a killer, and this, to me, is what he's got to control, because as exciting as he is with the plays that he makes with his feet, these are the plays he can't make. He can't run around and then try to force the ball into double coverage in the red zone, because it's at least 3 points and maybe 7 points. That, to me, is what will be the difference in the game, is his decision-making in those situations, Mahomes' decision-making there.
And And so that was just to give the full context. The Chiefs had gone field goal, field goal, field goal in the first half. They had left scoring opportunities on the board. They're down 24-9. They have an opportunity right before the half to cut into it. He does not have to take that chance. They have a timeout, and there's, I think, about 14 seconds on the clock. And he throws.
And they're getting the ball out for the second half.
Absolutely. Yep. There's, for every reason, it's not to make that mistake, at least get another field goal. And he makes what I've considered the second worst decision he made all year. The only thing that was worse than that was the interception. Similar situation where they're down three, two, right inside the two-minute warning against the Rams at midfield with plenty of time, and he went for it all instead of he could have run for a first down, a lot of things he could have done, and that essentially ended the game. I don't think this has been a huge trend all year, but in two of their biggest games against two of their toughest opponents, he has made that type of forcing it into coverage when you don't have to play. That's what you're talking
about. Yeah, and the other thing that happened that first half, he missed a wide-open Kareem Hunt.
On the first drive.
Backfield. Yeah, on the circle out of the backfield.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then he missed a wide-open Travis Kelce. Now, he was under pressure at that point that New England had brought some heat, but I don't anticipate him missing very many of those throws. And the plays that he can make with his feet do create a real problem for New England. And when you look at some of the big plays that New England gave up the second half, they had some real issues in coverage, and part of that was the extended plays. Tom's right. They're going to have to play absolutely their best football to beat Kansas City because Kansas City's defense is playing better than it has been, mm-hmm. and it's going to be interesting. There was a lot of man-to-man in the first game. It's going to be interesting to see how Bob Sutton changes up moving into this game.
So the last time these two teams played, they had two ties, four lead changes. They were very evenly matched. This is a different Patriots team. They don't look the same. They're missing key components, and players aren't playing the same. How different is the Patriots?
Well, I don't think the Patriots are going to attack too much different. And in this first meeting, week number six, Nick and I watched the game differently, but we watched the game because we knew Coach Mangini was going to come in here, and mm-hmm. we were like, we're sick of him saying watch the game.
Right, so when Chris says we watched the game, he means in the last 24 hours, not when it happened week six.
I was going to say, I watched the game, too.
Because you really want to see what are the differences in the team. And I just believe it's going to be impossible for New England to do what they did. Their defense in the red zone was remarkable. And Patty Mahomes did miss a couple early, but their defense was remarkable. So to answer the first question, that's how they're able to keep up with other offenses. This is how Belichick has done it through the years. Look at all the historic offenses that he's faced, and he's faced a bunch of them. Going back to the Colts, going back to the Rams, the greatest show on turf.
Even even the Super Bowl against the Falcons. That was the eighth highest scoring offense in NFL history.
All of these things, what do? They do it by they're going to have good red zone defense. Now, you might be able to make some big plays going up and down the field, but that's the thing that's been a constant. That's how they're able to keep pace. The other way that they're able to keep pace with these prolific teams is they believe in, and Coach Mangini said it in the break, was there's a day in the NFL where you can put hands on a guy. Now they still believe in that, but in a variety of different ways. Watch Dante Hightower. Watch the other linebackers, the other defensive ends. Watch what they do to Travis Kelce. Now they are terrified of Tyreek Hill, and when he's in the slot or in these bunch formations, they have some problems as far as coverages. But what they've done is, especially to the tight end, they're going to be physical with him coming off the line of scrimmage. That's one way that Bill Belichick has done it through the years, and that's what they've done in the previous meetings with the Chiefs with Travis Kelce.
I meant on offense also, including on defense, where Gronk is not playing the way we thought he would. Josh mm-hmm. Gordon is not even on the team anymore. It's a different-looking offense. So to keep pace with a very high-octane offense like this Chiefs one, I would imagine they got their work cut out for them.
Yeah, well, Justin Houston is back as well. Chris Jones is playing very well. He's a different player than I think people anticipated him being in terms
definitely
of the
definitely a different player than was in that first meeting, too. I think that was the game that he started this tremendous streak of having a sack in every game.
Yeah, and you, look, they're gonna butch Kelce at the line. They're going to hit him. They're going to put two guys on him. I mean, we did it with Tony Gonzalez. You're going to keep trying to disrupt his routes. The difficult thing for New England is it's a week instead of 2 weeks. It's on the road. There's going to be a bunch of noise. In this offense, there's shifts, there's motions, there's multiple personnel groups, there's gadget formations. They pressure the whole field, and New England is a rule-based defense. And what I mean by that is they're going to have double teams. They're going to have things that take away the best players formatted on rules. Now, when you shift and motion and put variables in place, there's a chance to have those rules exposed. And I think Kansas City does a really good job naturally mm-hmm. with their offense in doing that.
And the one name we haven't mentioned during this is Andy Reid. And Andy Reid, for one reason or another, you and I talked about this after the show yesterday, has had enormous success, even when Alex Smith was his quarterback, of putting up huge points on Belichick's Pats. Belichick coached 342 games with the Pats. He's allowed 40 points 7 times. That's insane in and of itself. But 3 of those 7 have been against Andy Reid's Chiefs in the last 5 years. Like, they once was this year, a couple times with Alex Smith, once in Gillette, once in Arrowhead. And so, schematically, Andy Reid doesn't have the issues that a lot of coaches seem to have with dealing with Belichick's defense. And the Chiefs are the healthiest on offense they have been all year long. They will miss Kareem Hunt in the receiving game, but Damian Williams has been a more than legitimate running threat for them. Sammy Watkins is now your third option, and nobody has solved the Tyreek Hill problem all year long. Now, it's going to be 0 degrees, and I'm curious about that.
And there's going to be a ton of snow, right?
Well, I don't think they're expecting, they said an Arctic blast, at least, but I thought they expected frigid temperatures, but not the snow they had last week. But maybe the forecast changed in the last 12 hours.
Yeah, I mean, there's Andy Reid's Eagles in the Super Bowl. I don't know if those are historic numbers that they put up.
No, I'm not saying every time, Coach. Hold on. Coach, you can't. Hold on. Wait. Hold on a second, though. Wait. If we take out the games Belichick's coached against Andy Reid's Chiefs, he's allowed 40 points 4 times in his career in 338 games. And then in 4 games coached against Andy Reid's Chiefs, he's allowed it 3 more times. There is a trend there. It's about 1% against everybody else and 75% against this coach and this team. So it is a little different.
No, it is. And look, what makes it hard is the volume. And it's the same thing that New Orleans does really well, is they create volume of adjustments for the defenses. And when you're based on being disciplined and sound and everybody communicating, and suddenly it's Kelsey's outside, Kelsey's inside, Tariq Hill's in the backfield, mm-hmm. guys are shifting and motioning. You've got to make those communications a lot more quickly, and it's hard. It puts a ton of stress on the defense.
I was wrong. So it's going to be 25? 25.
It's
and snowing
blast.
On Saturday, but you're right, 11 degrees. Yeah. So,
game's on Sunday.
Jenna, the meteorologist.
I am not the meteorologist, and I'm barely the
sports guest. And now back to the weather in your area.
Boy, Al. Coach, we'll see you later on. Coming up, which NFL team might be gearing up to deal with and for Antonio Brown next on First Things First. Back to the NFL. While Steelers are not among the 4 remaining teams in the playoffs, Antonio Brown is still making headlines. Last week, team president and owner Art Rooney II said it wasn't likely AB would be back next season. So where could he go? Jerry Rice thinks he should go to San Francisco and says that's where AB wants to go. Take a listen.
He wants to come here really bad. He's talking about running the hill with me, doing all that and just working out, just picking my brain. And, I don't know if it's going to happen because it's going to be up to Kyle Shanahan and also John Lynch. But I'm all for it if they want him to come on board. And I'm looking forward to passing some of that knowledge on to him and being around this guy because I know he's a great individual.
CeCe, should the Niners trade for AB?
Well, the Niners need a wide receiver. I mean, they needed a wide receiver last year. I thought it was a position with the salary cap and Jimmy Garoppolo, all these expectations, people thinking, oh, man, they're going to be a playoff threat based on the run that they went on at the end of the previous season. Like, that's a position they got to get better at. They have one of the best stories in the NFL going right now, and this goes by the name of George Kittle. He's an amazing tight end. I mean, he ripped up the NFL, broke the yardage mark. I mean, he consistently for the last year and a half, 2 years, has been outstanding. If you put another wide receiver with him like AB, and I like the fact that – I don't like the fact of how he's coming there, but I do like the fact that maybe he'll make an adjustment for the rest of his career. Maybe he'll open up his eyes because I just don't see a lot of people being in a better situation from a wide receiver standpoint than how they support in the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers. They play 3 receivers most of the time. They got a Hall of Fame quarterback. They got a great offensive line.
They throw it all the time.
They throw it all the time. All the time.
They have a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah. And that's one of the key components to be able to reach your potential. So, yes, it would be a good fit only if he's going to make some changes, because I know the things that he did to Ben Roethlisberger. I know Jimmy Garoppolo is not ready for that type of stuff. So I believe there has to be some growth on AB's part. But from a football standpoint, they need a wide receiver. They got salary cap space, and he's under a contract that's very friendly for the organization that takes him.
And a contract that's not very friendly is Jimmy Garoppolo's. And they've got a lot invested in him, as financially speaking. And you know what? He's played 12 games, a dozen games since college. He needs, when he comes back next year, they've got to give him support. They have to give him the softest landing possible in order, in my eyes, for that to turn out successfully. They made a big bet on Jimmy Garoppolo. 5 years, $137 million. I know they front-loaded it. I know that's the going rate. But that's the only the going rate for starting quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo, we got to make sure he is a quality starting quarterback in this league. And asking him to do it with, even with as good as Kittle is, with no real threats on the outside, it's not fair to him. And so if you can get arguably the best wide receiver in football, particularly for a team with John Lynch, I like some of his moves. He also, you'd have to trade a first-round pick and then some. We're not yet sure if John Lynch is a great drafter. So here's a one that you know would be a successful first-round pick, Antonio Brown. Like, there's no hit or miss. There's no how does that project. And it is year three for the Lynch-Shanahan combo. They're yet to win seven games in a season. Like, it can get late early now. And so if you can go get players of Antonio Brown's caliber do not typically come available. This is a Khalil Mack tier player in the league. He's coming available because of red flags off the field, obviously, but I would absolutely be involved in this conversation.
And let's not forget, you're going against the LA Rams, you're going against Seattle Seahawks, you're going to need some firepower. George Kittle's and Garoppolo do need some help. So when trying to win that division, you're going to need some players like him.
How much of how good Antonio Brown is because of the things that CC laid out? Is because he had a great quarterback who didn't miss, because they threw the ball so many times, because the organization fully supported his off-the-field behavior? I mean, how much of who? And I know he's a transcendent player, but still a lot of it is because of how much he was supported.
Well, listen, if I may compliment my partner here for a moment, it's the very rare wide receiver that can put up monster numbers with bad quarterbacks. And see, he didn't always have bad quarterbacks, but he had a lot of them. So how much of Julio's success is Matt Ryan, right? How much of, hey, we can go down the list, how much of DeAndre Hopkins this year was Deshaun Watson? Like, well, a lot of our best players have had the best QB wide receiver combos. There's been a QB on that side of it. AB, of course, he's benefited from it. But I watch him, man. I watch Jalen Ramsey in those Jags games last year blanketing him. And AB somehow in the playoffs coming down with that play. I watch him in the playoff game against Cincinnati catch a ball in the back of the end zone and get his head taken off and hold on to it. Like, his skills transfer everywhere. He is a great, great player. I know you say 99% of guys are system players. I don't know a system on the field that won't work for Antonio Brown. Now, maybe off the field he needs support and he needs to do better, but on the field I think he works everywhere.
Yeah, 99% of us, and AB, it's still true. AB still needs a system. You know the reason why he needs a system? He needs a system that he can be free to freelance. He has a lot of routes that right now they convert. If they play press on him, I know it because I know their system. Those routes are converted to go routes because that's a strength of his. Other wide receivers, they might keep those routes on, call it and run it because of their skill set to run out. Now, what he is he's exceptional short area, has unbelievable short area quickness. He's ridiculous off the bump and run. You can't bump and run him 30 or 40 snaps a game. In traffic, he has unusually for small hands, he has great catch radius for a small speed guy. And another thing, he is tough. Now, he can go across the middle. He can run shallow crosses. He can take the physical punishment. And he is motivated because of what's going on in Pittsburgh. So these are the things the organization would be getting. So not only the 49ers, they would have a great deal of interest. But watch for Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians. DeSean Jackson said he don't want to be in Tampa Bay anymore. Watch Bruce Arians because he had some success. And he knows how to deal with players like him. Look for Emmanuel Sanders. He's reached out to him to potentially bringing him to Denver, where Emmanuel Sanders, they could hook back up where they were roommates in Pittsburgh early in their career. And I believe that he could be that veteran to be able to push AB to that different level. So I believe there's a couple good landing spots for Antonio.
And wherever he goes, no matter the questions about the guy, his work ethic will go to the top of that team's depth chart. His work ethic, even amongst hard workers, is legendary in this league. He will bust his tail to get better and to stay at this level. It's all the other stuff that has made a guy who is on a clear Hall of Fame track available via trade for a team that is still trying to win.
Okay.
It's no different than doing this show, Jenna. If you want to do this show, you need a wide receiver. It's okay, but you just need a little couple special rules.
Little maintenance.
Yeah, not to tell the people. Yeah. Exactly.
You don't want to tell the people, or you do want to tell the people?
Yeah, no one at this show works harder than me.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.